Washington. I'm Linda Nygaard, and with me here at the studio is my good friend and co-host, Tom Conway.
Hi, helper. Tom. Hi, I'm her helper, elf.
My elf today, yeah. Well, today we're going to consider and discuss lots of things that bring hearth and home and good cheer.
And happiness.
Happiness, good cheer. Yeah, Tom always makes my job easier sometimes.
He's a constant talker.
I always know there's going to be another story if we run out. And sometimes, you know, we have to cut him off, but
it's true. I go home going, did I talk too much?
Yeah, we probably won't have to cut you off today.
Oh, good.
So today we're going to talk about lots of different things. And one of the things that we want to talk about for sure is solstice and what's going on around town around that. And we'll talk about some Christmas things and some recipes, have a little bit of folklore for you. And so, we hope that you can just sit down and relax and listen to us. If you can't, you can always go on the app to Voice of Vashon and look for our show. But for now, let's say put your feet up. Celebrate the return of the light with us. Happy solstice, Tom.
Thank you. Thank you. And also, we'll be posting content that we discuss on our Facebook page,
on
which
our
is
Facebook
Stirring
page,
the Page.
Stirring the
Page. Stirring the
we can stir the page, too. We already have some stuff up there, don't we?
We do. Yeah. We're on top of things, man.
Yeah, we got it going on today. So what's new, Tom?
What's new with me?
What's new with you? What's new on Vashon?
You know, I have did I talk about my cast iron griddle last time?
No.
Okay, good. Then I'll talk about that. I went to, you know, Mike Urban has estate sales, and I bought this really nice griddle. And first of all, I have to apologize if I'm like insulting your intelligence. But some people, if you don't cook and you're starting to cook, maybe you don't know what some of these things actually mean. So
right.
I will just explain it, and you can go, we knew that. But but a griddle is basically, it's a pan without sides, and it's usually elongated. It's like this, it's a long oval.
Like a pancake griddle.
Like a pancake griddle. Sometimes they're rectangular, and sometimes they're rectangular with curved edges.
Right.
So anyway, that's what mine is. It was seasoned, and I have to give Michael credit because what that means is cast iron has to be prepared properly so it doesn't stick. It becomes a nonstick surface through usage and through layering of oil on it over the years. So that's why, you know, people who like to cook with cast iron cherish their oldest pans. And so anyway, I bought this griddle, and within 30 minutes, I was making pancakes.
Excellent.
It was so great. But then I told myself, I have a new rule, like with pans. I have too many pans and kitchen implements that when I get something new, if I have something similar to it, I have to get rid of it. So I have duplicate pans that I need to exit out to Granny's.
Well, what about your new one? Tell me about your new
one. So my new one, I love it because it gives you a lot more surface area. And I have a large burner on my stove. So you can do things like, you know, you can do a whole mess of bacon or hash browns. It's really good for breakfasty things.
And what's special about this particular griddle?
It's a Wagner.
Oh,
and so Wagner and Griswold are two of the more sought after ones. But it's just really well made. Mm-hmm. And the cast iron, it's not pitted. It's really smooth.
So smooth and nice. I have a couple of really good ones, too, that I'll never part with.
Yeah.
So they're amazing nonstick utensils.
They're crazy.
Utensils, you know?
And if you do use cast iron or you're thinking about it, one of the cool things is you really don't wash them.
No,
you certainly don't leave all the junk in there, but you heat them up lightly with oil and then just wipe them out.
Mm-hmm.
And
just wipe them out when you're first done using them.
Exactly.
You know. Yeah. Excellent. Well, congratulations on your new member of the kitchen family.
That one and I have another Wagner. To me, the holy grail of cast iron pan is this Wagner lidded fried chicken fryer.
Oh, I know. My mom had one of those.
Yeah.
Wish I had it. Mm. So have you been baking, cooking?
Not as much as I'd like. I've been making bread. I made some raisin bread, cinnamon raisin
bread.
How'd
it turn out?
Pretty fabulous.
Did it?
Yeah.
You're just so good. Okay, well, I'm going to tell you my story.
Okay.
So, you know, we talked a little bit last time about...
Did you make bread?
I did make bread.
Oh, I'm sorry. I mistook the doorstop.
You told me you were going to be nice to me
today. I was going
to
be gentle.
Today.
I'm sorry.
You weren't going to be mean about it.
I wasn't. It was really... No, I... I think if anyone needs an anchor, we are.
You know, I am not a bread breaker. A bread maker.
Bed breaker. Well, that's okay.
Okay.
This is a family show, Linda. Boom shakalaka laka, boom shakalaka laka.
Anyway, I decided I was going to make Christmas bread this year because I'm craving it. Mm-hmm. My mom made it when we grew up, and we always had toast. It's a good bread for toast.
Does it have a special name besides Christmas bread?
Julkaka.
Julkaka.
It's Norwegian. Ah. Yeah. And so I found several recipes, you know, and mm-hmm. I found one that looked very similar to what it was my mom did. And, you know, my bread's just not anywhere near what my mom did.
May I redeem myself a little bit? It looks like it would make a fabulous toast.
It does. It's really good
it's
toast.
It's really dense.
Yeah, it's dense and it's heavy. But I think I put too much flour in it, and mm-hmm. I think I didn't knead it enough because I got tired of kneading. And while I was thinking about that, I thought, you know, Tom's rule of thumb is if it's not by the dough hook,
if you can't knead it with a dough hook, I'm not doing it.
Yeah. So I'll try that next time. But I did still get pleasure out of it. I knew it wasn't going to work. I could tell by the feel of it.
Yeah. Well, tell the listeners what goes in this bread.
Oh, sure. It's a sweet white bread. Mm-hmm. Lots of butter and candied fruit.
It smells great.
It's got not allspice. It's a cardamom. Mm-hmm. in it. And it's just a, you know, Scandinavian bread. And there is a recipe on our Facebook page for that. Julkaka.
Oh,
and if you'd like to try your hand at it, it's really good. And, you know, we always used to eat it as toast, but my mom's was much lighter.
Well, I'll try to make it. I'll try to make it and we'll compare notes.
Oh yeah. Right.
I'll try it with the dough hook.
And you can come back and say, see?
No. You know, people might think I'm shallow and superficial.
Oh, do you think? No.
And those are my fans.
I know. Those are the people who love you.
The people who love me. They know well.
Yeah. So that's basically what I did this week. I also learned how to run my Instapot, and I'm very happy about that.
Oh, what'd you make?
I made pot roast with red wine and mushrooms.
Man.
Oh, man.
Did you eat that by yourself?
No, I passed it out.
Oh, really?
I didn't share it with you.
Okay.
I'm
so
sorry.
I noticed.
I shared it with people who live very near me,
okay,
within walking
good.
Distance, and so I shared it.
Were they appreciative?
Nice. Yeah, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
The vegetables got too done.
Carrots
got too
it's
done.
It's a little bit of a, what I think you almost have to do is do two times. You do like the meat, and then halfway
you just
through,
shove the carrots in the oven while the meat's cooking.
That's a good idea.
You know, I mean,
yeah,
I love
just
roasted
roast
carrots,
it.
But these were like baby food carrots.
Oh, okay.
They weren't very good.
You know, which brings me to another point.
What?
And do poo-poo me if I must shut up and we go on to it at the
okay.
subject at hand. But I think those baby carrot things are the most worthless things around.
Well, you know what they are, don't you?
They're not real carrots.
Well, they are real carrots, but they're carrots that are past their prime. That are then shaved down to that
they're
little...
They're like lathed.
They're lathed.
Oh, that's hysterical.
And there's absolutely no flavor.
No.
And there's no nutrition in them.
No. If you can get like a really good... It's one of those things where you will be surprised the first time you do it. Get those big old carrots on the island that a lot of farm stands have.
Yeah.
And they look huge and you're going, oh, I want like a little baby carrot. No, you,
no,
don't.
You don't.
Carrots are to the exception.
Yeah.
You want a
big one.
You want a big winter storage carrot.
Oh, yeah. They're so good. And I guess there's one more thing I've been doing that I'm kind of excited about in the old-fashioned sense, in that I'm sticking cloves and oranges, and I'm giving them away. Do you remember doing that in grade school?
Oh, yeah.
Where you put all the cloves, you just put all the cloves all around on the orange.
Yeah, you would make, what do they call them, pomander?
Pomander, yeah, and people would put them in their closet or lingerie drawer or something.
Yeah,
but
and
I have a couple just sitting on the table, and they make my... kitchen smell really, really good. So,
yeah.
You know, that's a great kid activity.
It is. Well, tell them exactly how you do it.
Well, it's very difficult. You take an orange and a clove,
uh-huh.
and you poke the clove in the orange. And you're done when the orange is full of cloves, when it's a solid ball of cloves.
Oh.
Or, as sometimes I've done, you can make designs. You know,
right.
go like a half a circle or a something. Mm-hmm. But I don't do that because everything, it doesn't work. I like, it's not very pretty, let me put it that way.
Yeah.
I like them with all cloves. And then the only advice I would have is, you know, I've worn my fingers raw, mm-hmm. poking those cloves until someone suggested, I use a thimble.
Yes, one of your clever friends.
One of my clever friends. Clever Clogs Conway.
Clever Clogs Conway. You know, another thing I saw was where the person took a Sharpie of like a light color, not like a black.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, no, it was black. And they just sort of create a pattern with the Sharpie. And then they would get like some sort of thing, like a ice pick or a thing that they could puncture. Yeah. And they'd puncture all the holes so it'd be easier.
Oh, and then just put it in there.
Yeah, this was very, they made it
well,
really complicated.
Well, that's an art class.
That was an art class, and they used a thimble so you'd protect your thumb.
Well, you know, we're getting near Christmas, and so we have some of those things to talk about. But before we talk about that, I want to talk about hard candy at Christmas time.
You know.
You have a little story, I think, I'd like to hear.
Oh, I do have a story that I tell each Christmas, but it has nothing to do with me. It has to do with one of our island...
Oh, well, if it's not about you, we don't care.
You know, that's what I... No, oops, I almost...
Kidding.
I almost told.
I know.
Yeah, really? That makes perfect sense to me.
Okay, move on.
Move on. Okay, so one of our island treasures, Adam Cohn of Snapdragon, Snap, you and I, you know, and we haven't had any toddies or anything.
No, but we might.
We should. So anyway, Adam Cohn, head baker and awesome guy of the Snapdragon Cafe and Bakery. He was telling me this story one Christmas, and I just howled because, number one, Adam is the consummate storyteller. He really uses sort of this wonderful language that's just his, and he actually takes it upon it, the story, as it is a story, and it's not just...
Right.
You know, blurting out a bunch of words stuck together. So there's an artist, there is an artistry to his storytelling, which makes it really special. So he's telling the story about his family and about his dad, who would make this thing like usually around Christmas. And they used to call it bacon candy. And I thought, oh, you mean like candied bacon? He goes, no, bacon, it's bacon candy. And I go, or candy bacon, which one was it? Mm. No, it was bacon candy.
It has to be bacon,
it's bacon candy.
Yeah.
And so what you do is like you, because it was really the sort of the cheapest Christmas candy, and usually you could keep, you know, last year's, it would still be fine, and you get that hard candy, the kind that Dolly Parton sings about, hard candy Christmas.
Yeah.
And what he would do is he would break it up with a hammer, and he would heat up the bacon drippings in the frying pan, no doubt a cast iron, and he would drop the bag of hard candy shards and crumbles into the pan. And then while it
into
was
into the pan of bacon grease.
Into the pan of bacon grease, and then swirl it all up, and it'd make this sort of...
And are we
like
heating it up?
We're
over
heating
the
it
stove.
Up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's kind of making like stained glass bacon candy. And then when it would cool, it would just basically be, you know, it would all sort of be this amalgamation of basically sugared candy that's encased in bacon fat, or at least infused with it. And so then you break it all up, and when you're eating it, it's like candy that tastes like bacon.
You know, I bet it's good.
I know. I bet it is.
I've made bacon grease ginger snaps.
Oh, yeah?
And instead of butter, you use bacon grease.
See?
And lots of pepper. They're really
good.
We have to
rebrand it. We could call it bacon
ginger snaps, ginger bacon ginger. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But we're not going to solve that one here. But Adam, if you're listening, I love the idea of bacon candy, and I hope you make some.
I know.
Being, you know, vegetarian and all.
Yeah. Well, Megan wouldn't have any, I don't think.
No, I don't think Megan would. That's probably true. You know, we've been talking a little bit about baking out in the world. People are baking and doing all kinds of things right now. But, you know, vanilla, I had to take out a loan.
Yeah,
to
I was going to start.
I was going to start
a Tom's crowdfunder for vanilla beans.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, but you found some good news for us.
I did. I had done it in the past, and I thought, oh, I need to resurrect this process of making my own vanilla. And I found a good source, usually on like eBay. You know, has basically become sort of a centralized market for a lot of brick and mortar.
It really has.
Stores and suppliers. And so one of the things you can get, and there's a lot to choose from, is vanilla. And vanilla, if you're not familiar with vanilla beans are, they're grown on an orchid plant, which actually acts like a vine. And they usually they grow on posts. And so after they bloom and they pollinate them, these beans grow. And then when these beans dry, they actually ferment them. So they have this beautiful, it's amazing that they even showed up, you know, as like something who,
yeah.
like the most popular flavoring there is. How did this ever, how
who
somebody
thought of
hey,
that?
What about those orchid
those
beans?
Long,
what they taste
things.
Like?
Yeah.
It's such an odd thing to me that it's such
well,
a common.
Well, I think the same about artichokes. Who thought of that?
Yeah. Who came up with that one?
But anyway, back to vanilla.
Oh, yeah. So back to the vanilla. So these beans, you buy the beans. I usually buy them on eBay from different suppliers, and you can get, like, if you buy them at retail around here, they're usually around $3 or $4 a bean. It's painful. So if you usually buy them from a wholesaler, retailer on, mm-hmm. you know, online or something, you can usually get them, you know, 10 for $12 or, you know, 20.
Wow, and they're like 18 for $3.
Yeah, so it's really a pretty good deal. And so what I do—
Are they fresh enough or are they all dried up and wrinkled?
Well, so what I do is I read the reviews because everyone's a critic. And
right.
so people are quick to tell you how good or bad they mm-hmm. are. So you get a really good understanding, like, oh my God, people will say like, oh my God, these were just as dry as toothpicks. And somebody mm-hmm. else will go, they were luscious and supple. And
so you
know,
have to trust your gut.
You sort
I
of
guess.
Look at some of the reviews on them, and there's different vanilla beans you can get. The good news is that Mexico has sort of become a formidable producer of vanilla over the, you know, last couple decades.
Mm-hmm.
So it used to be just Madagascar and Tahiti.
Right.
So now you can get some pretty reasonable ones, and their vanilla's great.
So do you put it in bourbon?
So anyway, so you take, what I do is I take like 3 or 4, 5 or 6. What am I telling you? I put about 10.
Okay.
I put about
Thank 10. You.
Yeah. I get like a salad dressing size bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And you can put the liquor of your choice. If you don't want the liquor to impart any flavor, you can use a vodka. And then, but sometimes I like to do bourbon. And you've often heard of bourbon vanilla.
Yeah.
But it's not, it has that, oddly, the bourbon has nothing to do with bourbon. It's basically an island where it was grown. I was surprised to learn that.
I always wondered why it was called bourbon.
Yeah.
I never could it or taste it or.
Yeah.
Oh.
No, it's just where
it
was grown.
Well, thank you for that little bit of knowledge.
You betcha.
Thank you.
So anyway, I make that. And then you basically cut the slits in the vanilla bean, scrape out the seeds, but keep it all in there
mm-hmm.
and let it sit for a month or two. And then you just keep adding as you go down, add liquor and add vanilla beans.
And do you measure it the same as your recipe calls
I do.
For?
Yeah.
Yum. Well, that's great. I think I want to do that.
Yeah, it's a fun thing. It makes a really great gift, too.
It's a really good gift. Yeah. Well, so today we get to welcome the light.
Oh.
And I'm pretty excited about that. You know what? Tomorrow's going to be 3 seconds longer than today.
That's a good 3 seconds.
Think about it. Yeah.
You know, Jalinda, do you find yourself, you'll be, I went to someone's house for like, we just had an early dinner and then I came home and I thought, oh, I'm going to go to bed. It's got to be at least 10 or 11. And it was like 7:30.
It's 4:30.
Yeah, exactly.
No, mine's 4:30. 7:30, I am in bed.
It's just
it seems
crazy.
Like, it's just really crazy. It feels every year like it gets darker earlier. But today we're going to talk about bringing in the light. And one thing I wanted to mention is, you know, there's a lot that goes on Vashon.
Yeah.
At solstice. And I, Karen Biondo has done a solstice gathering luminary walk since 1996, I think.
Yeah, she's insane.
Yeah, she is.
And I say that. I say that as a friend and with a love.
Yeah.
Because it used to be like when she would do it, I go, Karen, you know, we don't have to go to Tahlequah with this thing. You're like, oh my God, she was into it and she would really commit and she loved it so much.
Yeah.
And I really applaud her for that.
I do too.
Because it brought a lot of joy. Plus it was kind of fun. A lot of people like myself, we'd drive with our lights off in the early days when there wasn't a lot of traffic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then you could see them really well.
Right. Oh, you guys. Well, this year is going to be a little bit different. This year she's doing it, behind Vashon Community Care, which used to be Vashon Community Care,
mm-hmm.
there's a wonderful path back there. Have you ever been back there?
No.
It's a gorgeous path, and it's kind of circular, and it wanders mm-hmm. around, and it's all flat. It's very easy to walk.
Oh, nice.
And Karen and her little elves are over there right now.
And so they're putting sand in.
They're putting sand in paper bags and candles. And so they'll have a luminary walk that will start at dark, whatever time that is. Sunset, I think, is 4:21 today. So it would be sometime around that. If any listeners want to go over there, it's just, you know, by VCC or the Episcopal Church.
Across the street from the Episcopal Church, right?
Yeah. And, you know, that kind of thing has been celebrated for centuries. And it used to be on solstice that people would eat their, well, they chose to use candlelight as opposed to oil lamps when they're eating dinner at night. So that it's real light. It's different from oil, and it's more natural light, they think. And they used to do that to eat their dinners. It started in medieval Britain, really, with gratitude toward the orchards. It started as an orchard honoring pageant, kind of, and people would go into the orchards and sing to the trees, and you know, they'd have a lot of drinks and they'd sing and dance, and they had quite a lot of pagan celebration around the returning of the light. And the reason that they sang to the trees was that they wanted to make them happy, to ensure that they got a good harvest next year. So the first thing they did was they go into the orchard and thank the trees for what they had just done. And then the next thing they did was ask them for more good bounty next year. And I understand you found a little bit different story about that, didn't you?
Well, I found that a lot of, especially in the UK, that different regions would do different things, but a lot of them, it's like you say, there was an initial celebration of going out to the orchards, and it was usually, I think, the 12th night, and the 6th night, I think, also maybe one or the other. But
anyway, there's something about Epiphany,
exactly.
Yeah,
but we're not like edumacated about it at all. We're just spouting off as if we do know it. It was where you go out in the orchard and you were basically kind of shaking up the trees for like, hey, listen up, partner.
Wake up.
You're going to produce, this is for a sort of a celebration of producing a lot of fruit the next year. And there were even some counties where they would, when gunpowder became prevalent, that they would shoot the trees. And I thought, well, that seems counterproductive. But the more I researched, it was like they wouldn't have lead or anything. They would just shoot the gunpowder to make noise.
I just don't. Yeah, well, okay. Yeah.
Oh, those crazy Brits.
Oh, those guns.
Yeah.
You know.
But I know that I'm pretty sure it was Dragon's Head cider. They had a wassail.
Did they?
Uh-huh. A couple years ago before COVID.
Uh-huh.
And I heard it was just a blast. Such a good time. I think they had a bonfire and people went out in the orchard, and I think they pour cider from last year on the trees as a omen for the next year's crop. And I mean, you know, if you're looking for something to do on a cold winter night, that's a good thing.
You know, I love the idea of the light turning. It's really affecting me this year much more than normal. This year it's really bad for me, so I'm really looking forward to it. And I was thinking, well, what kinds of celebratory foods can we do for solstice? And what I have found is really not much.
Tuna melt? Is it tuna melt part of that?
It's mostly drinking. And so, you know, the food that they ate, and they did celebrate with the food, was mostly nuts and berries and squash and, you know, the things that are available at that time. And, you know, I don't need to do that. Let's just drink.
Yeah, it is funny. I think too, there's not a lot going on in the I'm amazed people actually survived like one generation, because, you know, before you know, food, there just wasn't that much.
There wasn't much
food, and you had to sit out a year, know, or half a year where there was no production.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something I'd really like to investigate further down the lane. You know, how they survived and how it was hard. I'm sure it was hard. Well, so since we're going to be drinking so much, I thought we could talk about wassail.
For sure.
And do you know what it means? Do you know where it came from? The word?
I don't.
It is Old English. And I forgive me, Old English intellectuals out there. I don't know if I can pronounce this, but it's wassail. W-A-S-H, with a funny little thing over the A.
Azhurba.
And that's Old English, which I don't read. But it means to your good health. It means may you live healthily. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's about, is the returning of the light and the healthy. So wassail itself, I didn't really know much about wassail. And wow, is it really good? Have you had wassail?
Not in my entire life.
Okay, well, so it's fruit juice mainly, and spices like cloves and cinnamon and ginger. They like to put ginger in it.
Is there alcohol in
it? You can add alcohol, but that's not how they did it in the beginning. It wasn't about alcohol.
It wasn't about the booze.
No, it was about the warmth, the warm fruit. Mm-hmm. And then they have another thing they call lamb's wool, which is wassail. It's a wassail. There is a wassail recipe on the Facebook page for stirring the pot. Mm-hmm. And I encourage everybody with a family to make it, because everybody will love it. It's really good. And I thought it was some old-fashioned awful thing that I wouldn't like.
I kept thinking there was beer or ale in it, which...
I think there is. I think there is. But the recipe and the lore that I read about it was non-alcoholic, which I thought was great for the kids. And some people choose not to drink, you know. And there's a lot of tradition around wassail and how they serve it. It's got to be served in the proper bowl. It's
and
a giant bowl.
Two Christmas carols devoted to it.
Yes, and two carols devoted to it, which is wonderful.
And if you'd like me to sing it,
okay, go ahead. No. Come on.
No, we'll drive off every listener.
Okay.
But the one does start wassail, wassail all over the town.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one is, here we go, a wassailing.
A wassailing, a wassailing.
Yep. And if you're my age, the only people that sang it were Ray Conniff Singers.
Oh, my God. Remember them?
Yes.
Oh,
I love
the Ray Conniff Singers. Ooh, good idea. So anyway, this lamb's wool thing.
Yeah.
So you do your wassail the way the recipe tells you to do it. And it steeps for a while, and it sits on the stove for a while with all its spices and the fruits melding together. And then you bake apples. You core the apples and bake them whole till they're real mushy. And then you take them out, and they're easy to pop out of the skins, apparently. I have not done this. But then you put the pulp of the apple into the wassail, into the hot wassail. And you stir it and 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 stir it. And your apples at this point are almost pureed.
Mm-hmm.
And so then what happens is the apples rise to the top, and it looks like lamb's wool, because they kind of create a little foam and a little few bubbles, and so they call that lamb's wool.
Much nicer term than white scum.
It's not scummy.
Oh, it isn't scummy. That's why it's lamb's wool. Okay.
Well, they would have called it scummy if it was scummy.
I would think like pond scum or something.
No, it's big fluffs. It's beautiful. I've seen pictures.
Have you really seen it? Looks good?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. We got to do that. We have so much we have to.
I know.
We should just move in together and share a kitchen.
Okay, let's do that. Okay. No, I don't want to share a kitchen.
Nah.
But another custom.
You've seen how I live.
And me too. Like, how messy is your kitchen
today? Oh, geez.
Don't tell me.
Let's just blow it up.
But anyway, here's another thing I loved about wassail that I found out. At the bottom of the wassail bowls, sometimes, was a crust of bread. And that, so when you're drinking, you get the wassail almost gone, you'll find a crust of bread in the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And that crust of bread was given to the most important person in the room. And then
I wonder how they determined that.
Well, I suppose everyone must have known who was the most important.
Probably social rank.
And maybe it was the host.
Yeah.
You know, or the hostess or something. I don't know, but most important.
Or the uncle they never talked about.
That could mean a lot of things. Yeah, it could. But anyway, they do that. They take the crust of bread out, and the most important person takes a little bite of it, a little pinch off of it, and then they pass it around, and everybody gets to pinch it.
Oh.
And so I guess that's pretty wonderful.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. But what else do I know about it? Not a lot, except that it's a big deal. And now I want to make it a big deal in my life.
Do you think is it still a big deal in Europe? I know that here, maybe.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's a
European tradition.
It's a tradition there.
Yeah.
Whereas it isn't here.
Our tradition is probably more based in, as far as drinks go, like we're big mulled wine drinkers here.
Well, this is along those lines,
yeah,
except it's fruit.
It is. Okay.
You know?
And yeah. And eggnog too.
Oh, eggnog. Let's talk about eggnog.
Yes.
You know our friend Truman O'Brien.
Yes.
Do you remember him?
Oh, Truman. You know, I have a little shrine for Truman in my house
because
he's so awesome.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
He's you know, I'm deciding if I should gild it or not.
Well, you probably should. Well, I just have a little tiny airplane on my kitchen table.
Much more appropriate.
Well, it's just, you know, for safety.
Yeah.
now that he's living his 10th life.
I was going to say, if Truman is in the room, we're safe.
Exactly.
What would Truman do? How would he get out of this trunk?
Oh, Truman's sitting right here with us, and he's just giggling and embarrassed. Hi, Truman.
He's the best.
Well, Truman has a recipe for eggnog.
That is a worthy recipe.
Oh, my goodness, is it a recipe? It'll knock you out.
Yeah.
Literally.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Do you have it up?
Where do I have it? I had it right here.
Here it is.
Okay, good.
No, that's history of eggnog.
Oh, you know what? I have it. This is one of those things where you go, do I have it in my notes or do I have a...
I know.
I have it... Oh, here. Nope. I have a chicken casserole recipe. Here it is, eggnog.
Don't mix it with chicken casserole.
I know. In my notes, I have like every... It's how I organize recipes, which is basically how I don't organize recipes. This is...
Just read parts of it. Okay. Don't read the whole thing.
All right.
Because it's on the website, or it's on the Facebook page.
Okay, and this is just the brief intro, the notes about it, is Grand Marnier may come as a surprise, but we've always had it during this month of December to be used on Christmas and New Year's. Once you try it, you'll never use a different recipe. And this particular recipe...
Name the booze.
Okay, so here we go. These are the ingredients. They're
always the same.
Well, there's...
With the eggs and cream.
Yeah, there's... Well, people might not know.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah, that's okay. So, geez. Okay, back to the eggnog. Christmas eggnog. It has 6 egg yolks, and you split the yolks and the whites. It has a cup of maple. This one has a cup of maple syrup, but you can also use granulated syrup. I believe Truman prefers granulated sugar.
He told us that.
I prefer maple syrup.
I love maple syrup.
1 cup rum, but we're still friends. Mm-hmm. 1 cup of Grand Marnier, which is really a boost. That's an upgrade.
Yeah, and it's not a normal.
No. And then grated rind of 1 orange, mm-hmm. 1/2 cup of brandy, 1 vanilla bean. Oop, there goes $6. Okay. Mm-hmm. And 6 cups of milk and 3 cups of heavy cream. 6 egg whites beaten stiff and freshly grated nutmeg. Yeah. It's a diet. It's like a diet plate.
Yeah. Do you know that an average cup of eggnog is 500 calories?
I believe it because I like it so much.
I love it.
Usually how I like something is directly proportional to its calorie.
Yeah.
It's
usually calorie-in. How much fat's in it? Uh-huh. Oh, that's good. Well, you know who else had a wonderful recipe for eggnog? Are you finished? I'm sorry.
Yeah, yes.
Are you?
I'm used to it.
Okay. Thanks. another somebody who had a good recipe for eggnog was George Washington.
Really?
And he loved his eggnog. And there's some dispute because when he wrote down his recipe in his own handwriting, he neglected to put how many eggs are in it.
Oh.
And so cooks through the years have decided it's about a dozen.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 1/4 of cream and 1/4 of milk and sugar, 1 pint of brandy, 1/2 pint of rye whiskey, and 1/2 pint of Jamaican rum, and 1/4 pint of sherry. And it says you mix the liquor first. And he has a definite way of walking through this recipe, uh-huh. and you have to let it sit in a cool place for several days.
Until salmonella is just edging on the corners.
Yeah, I mean,
isn't it funny?
We wouldn't do that now.
No, even
with raw eggs.
I always worry about those.
Yeah, we do. So I think eggnog is another thing we ought to do together.
That'd be good.
I've never made, one time I made eggnog from scratch. It's a big job.
I usually love eggnog.
I do too.
And one of my favorite tricks with eggnog, okay, listen up, kids. It's going to blow your mind, is it's basically you're drinking when it boils down to, it's really an ice cream custard. It really is. That's about basically if you're making custard ice cream,
with
it pretty much
it.
Have the same ingredients. Mm-hmm. So if you have an ice cream maker, you can just take 1/2 gallon of commercial eggnog that you get in, you know, you get at the store,
mm-hmm.
and you can put it in your ice cream maker or your ice cream freezer and mix it, and it'll turn into this luscious eggnog ice cream.
Yum.
Yeah.
I love that.
I know. How's that for a tip?
Yeah, that's a good tip.
And I have done this, so I know it works.
How do you feel about commercial eggnog?
You know, I think it's great. I really do.
You know which one I like best?
Uh-uh.
The Southern Comfort one.
Oh, yeah.
That's really good.
You know, it throws...
There's no booze in it.
There's no booze, but it what throws me off is, like, it's really... It's like, I think it's Dairy Gold's way of just playing
with
this. Is
it Dairy Gold?
There's a Dairy... Well, that's the last one I got. And they have two. They have one called Classic and then
right.
one
that's
called...
Dairy Gold, yeah.
One called something like Classic. It's like mm-hmm. Classic and Old Fashioned, and you're going...
Right.
What's, isn't that the same?
What's the what?
I don't know what the yeah. difference is.
Yeah. Can I circle back for just a second? I had one more thing I wanted to tell you
right
about
on, sister.
Wassail.
Yes.
In some places in Wales, especially, they have a wassailing horse, and it is not a real horse. They go to great lengths to manufacture. I guess they sew it. A horse's head. It looks like a costume, you know.
Good. I'm glad you qualified that.
I mean, it's not a horse's head.
Okay, just
okay.
Perfect.
So it's a costume,
uh-huh.
and somebody wears it like you would wear it. You put the horse's head on, and then you have a robe over that, some kind of long, flowy robes, and then you do a parade down the street and singing wassail songs. And nobody seems to be able to tell me where this came from. I've been looking and looking, trying to find out where was the first wassail horse, and why, and who thought of that. But they do that in Wales, and it's a very time-honored procession.
Well, you know, there are lots of traditions that you just sort of defy understanding for the modern mind. And one of them, which has had a resurgence, if I can just interject this,
uh-huh.
is the, do you know what a Krampus is?
Oh, God, I'm scared to death of Krampus.
They're horrible. I just learned about it probably like 10 years ago.
Yeah, probably me too.
I was watching something on YouTube, and I swear I went and locked my doors and
closed
the blinds.
It's the scariest thing ever.
Even though this was happening in Bavaria, I thought. And so for those of you who don't know Krampus, it's...
And that's with a K. K-R-A-M-P-U-S.
It's even spelled scary.
Yeah.
But it's basically these people dress up as this wretchedly gruesome, grotesque, and frighteningly realistic demon that's part goat, part man, definitely leans on the Beelzebub side of the things. and they walk through the streets of, it's basically was in Germany or Bavaria or some
Austria.
Slavic.
It started in Austria, yeah.
And right, I forgot what the date was. It was before Christmas, and they go through the streets with, you know, chains and noisemakers.
It's horrible.
And it's supposed to scare kids into being good.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would just scare kids into having therapy for the rest of their lives.
Well, you know, it is a half man, half goat
yeah.
thing.
And you might think it's comical, but if you look it up online, they're insanely frightening. They usually, Truman's showing me one right now, and I just wet my pants.
Oh, I can't even go there.
I know. So here's the big controversy.
Mm-hmm.
They were invited. There's a Krampus group in Seattle.
In Seattle, of course there is. Yeah.
You know, well, you know, big boys liking to dress up as
sure.
as demons. What else is there to
yeah.
do? So they were invited by the Chamber of Commerce of Leavenworth
mm-hmm.
for their Village of Lights. You know, which is
that every year.
The new name for their it used to be Christmas Village or something,
Christmas
but now it's
yeah. Christmas in Leavenworth.
Yeah, but now they do it all month, so they call it Village
okay.
of Lights. Anyway, so people got kind of ticked off because they thought these people were really scary
mm-hmm.
and that the kids were crying and stuff. And then somebody made a real big stink, but as I've read in Crosscut, you know, the publication,
yeah.
There's more to the story about.
Okay.
It's part Krampus and it's part sour grapes about not getting a booth on the main street. And so somebody was making a big stink about the Krampus
that they
being
shouldn't
there.
Be there.
That they shouldn't be there.
This is too scary.
It's too scary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it is.
It is. I think.
And I mean, little kids.
If I had children, I would think it's an unfortunate addition to a winter Christmas festival.
But I have one question that I hope I don't get in trouble for. But why is it that Germans and the Bavarian people, they like to be scared.
Maybe it's a cultural thing. Like, you know, maybe American teenagers love to be scared. They like to, you know, Halloween 14 or something.
Well, and maybe if you grew up with it.
Yeah.
It
as a cultural
be as
thing.
Scary.
Yeah. To be
I
scared.
Don't know, but I don't want to see that.
No, I like lambs and kittens, rainbows
and
cupcakes.
Santa Claus.
Like Santa Claus.
That is the elf.
Butterflies.
Yeah.
Fairies and sprites.
What else do we have to talk about today? Oh, what are we going to do while we drink?
What are we going to do?
Like, you know, what do we do while we drink how about Victorian parlor games?
Like what's the entertainment when you're out there at a party drinking?
Yeah.
We don't mean like drinking, like getting drunk or anything. We just mean like these delicious drinks we're about to talk about.
Well, and maybe you do
get
a little
true.
Tipsy. Who knows? I don't know. But there's a parlor game, a Victorian parlor game that, it's an invention. You know, when we think of Victorian Christmases, we think of all the decorations and the lights and the wonder. And, you know, the Victorians did it up really well. But during Queen Victoria's rule, they had a game that they played on Christmas Eve. I can't find the name of it right now.
Oh, hey, while you're looking for that, can I share something that I found with your wassail?
Yeah.
Another thing they used to do with wassail, which was a game they would do, an insane game in the Victorian times, is when they would light raisins or fruit. Oh, is that your? That's, you know, folks, if this was television, I just got the biggest kibosh and I got the look of a Krampus. Oh, that was that your?
Stop it! He lies.
Oh, you know what? I can't remember the rest of the story. Maybe Linda?
Well, they didn't light the fruit.
They didn't light the fruit?
No. What they did was they had a big bowl of brandy, a huge bowl of brandy, and they put raisins in it. And then everyone gathered round the big bowl and they lit it on fire because brandy burns like that. And then the game is that you reach your hand in there and grab a raisin, and when the raisin's still on fire, you throw it in your mouth.
Oh.
And that's the game. But then...
a manly game.
It's a manly. The manly men from Minnesota played it, probably. Yeah. But the next day, burns and, you know, singed mustaches and things like that.
No taste in your tongue.
No taste on your tongue were considered badges of honor.
Oh.
On Christmas Day. They did this game happened on Christmas Day.
So you'd be going around town, they'd go like, Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. Sorry, I can't feel my tongue.
No, you could say ho, ho, ho. So there's a little verse that goes with it.
Yeah.
With his blue and lapping tongue, many of you will be stung. Snip, snap, dragon. Oh, the game's called Snapdragon. Snip, snap, dragon. For he snaps all that comes, snatching at his feast of plums. Snip, snap, dragon.
Nice.
Now, the feast of plums... raisins were kind of hard to come by back then. So you could put plums in too if you didn't have raisins. If you didn't have access
dried
to
plums.
Yeah, just put some dried plums in. So
I wonder if they had dates then, if they imported dates from the Middle East or.
Oh, probably. Yeah. I would imagine. They also tried to scoop their mug into the bowl while the bowl was on fire, hoping that the fire would last in the mug and that they could drink it without singeing their mustache.
I would say a lot of those people had no nasal hair.
Well, I think a lot of those people probably already had a lot to drink before they did
before
that.
You know, thank God it was the ages before hairspray. They would have been caught on fire.
That's for sure. Hey, you know, there's something I really want to hear from you. And we skipped over it in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
My fault.
That's okay.
I would like to hear about Vashon 100 years ago.
Oh, Vashon 100 years ago. Yeah, I was... So for my pals listening, I was telling... Linda? Is that Linda? I was telling Linda... This is happening more often.
Wait, who are you?
Yeah, wait. Why do I know you? Anyway, I'm a history buff, and I love Vashon history. Is really just kind of blows me away because I really almost think Vashon was more of a center of commerce 100 years ago than it is now. You know, we're kind of a satellite community of Seattle, but 100 years ago there was a ton of stuff going on, and I was gonna share that with you in a minute. But what I wanted to share that's a little more poetic and in a way kind of heartbreaking is a projection of the future in the newspaper 100 years ago. And Mike Suddeth is God bless him. His family owned the Vashon Island News Record, mm-hmm. and anyway, he has copies of them, and he's downloaded a lot of, I think almost all he had. So that source is available online. And so I like to go looking through it and see what's been going on. And I was looking at the paper 100 years from today.
Exactly.
Yeah. With one day, the 22nd.
Okay. Well, that's, you know, solstice is usually between the 21st and 23rd.
Yeah.
So
on the very front page, the lead story in the Vashon Island News Record is the headline is "The Spirit of Christmas Seems to Permeate Every Heart and Home on Vashon." So I'll just read the first paragraph or two. This is, and it starts off, "This is the closing of Christmas week the world over. Nowhere is the spirit of Christmas more fully entered into than on the islands of Vashon and Maury." Oh, they included Maury.
Oh. And they said, and.
That was nice. Mm-hmm. "No physical suffering that is known. Health and peace seems to prevail in every home. The mail has been unusually heavy, both the outgoing, which shows our people are remembering the folks back east, and the incoming, which indicates the folks back east have not forgotten the dear ones who are, quote, out on Vashon Island."
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes on to say, "Nationally and internationally, we doubt there has ever been a time since the birth of Jesus in the Bethlehem of Judea more than 19 centuries ago when the song 'Peace on Earth' could be sung with such heart." Here, I have to scoot it up. I have to go another page real quick. "With such heart, the United States is legally and literally at peace with the entire world. The big conference that is on in Washington will likely do much toward the elimination of future war.
At home
and abroad, we can fully enter into the spirit of Dickens and his Christmas Carol."
Wow.
Isn't that crazy that there was such optimism in 1921, which was, you know, of course, right after World War One,
and we're never going to have any more wars.
And they were thinking League of Nations. And Yeah.
Interesting. That's fun. I like that. Thank you, Tom.
You bet.
You want to talk about fruitcake?
Well, I might want to talk about fruitcake, but I wanted to, can I add another thing that's sort of kind of cool about the 100 years ago thing?
Oh, yeah, you're not done yet. I'm sorry.
No. There's just so many fascinating things.
I know,
things.
There are.
But I was looking at the some of the summary stories 100 mm-hmm. years ago,
mm-hmm.
and one of the recurring, what they would do is they go around the island, and it was like each little sort of village, you know, Ellisport, Burton, mm-hmm. Portage, mm-hmm. Liza Beulah, they all had their own little sort of news entries for the newspaper.
Okay.
And 100 years ago, they were all dealing with washed out roads, like major washed out roads. And the citizens were actually going out and rebuilding the roads. There wasn't really a municipality.
There was nobody you could call?
No. And in fact, the bridge just south of Woodward, near where I live on the Beale Greenhouses, was demolished by a flood.
Oh.
And you couldn't cross Beale Road. I have to try that again. Just slow down a little traffic. Here, try to speed now.
This. Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that was kind of interesting. The other thing that was really interesting were the ads in the newspapers were of all these stores. There were very specific stores as far as what they sold. And
like Vashon stores?
Vashon stores that had really kind of amazing commerce. Like there was one in Ellisport, and they were talking about Christmas time, we've got fresh fruits, nuts, and dates, and perfect Christmas gifts. And they had another ad similar to that in Portage. They mm-hmm. had one in Docton.
Wow.
So there was a lot of, you know, each little burb had their own mm-hmm. sort of central place of commerce, mm-hmm. which I found really interesting.
I think we should bring that back. That
yeah.
would be good.
Wouldn't that be cool?
That would be really good. Yeah. Well, you know, today Vashon has quite a bit to pick from.
No, we're doing pretty,
you know,
yeah.
I think we're doing pretty well, but I would love to see something at Portage. Wouldn't that be fun?
Oh, that would be so.
That building.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And have, see, okay, here was my idea.
What?
You want to hear it?
Yeah.
When they were trying to sell the Hayak, you know, the ferry that was out of commission.
Yeah.
My $1 million idea, though I had like $1.52 in my bank account, was to buy the Hayak, and it didn't go for that much, and then to moor it in Tramp Harbor.
Oh.
And we could have summer concerts there.
Oh, wouldn't that be fun?
And annoy all the residents of Tramp Harbor
and
Ellisport.
Food things. Yeah, it would be very annoying.
But wouldn't that be cool to have like have a ferry somewhere, like an old historic
parked one
that you could use for functions or concerts or weddings or...
You know, Vashon needs a function space.
We do.
With a kitchen.
It's, God knows we do.
We do.
Yeah. Like even a lot of the things have happened this winter. It would be so nice if they were covered.
Indoors. Well, dream on, boy.
Dream on, baby.
Yeah, just keep dreaming. Well, we're getting really close here. And I'm wondering, do we want to go to cookies or do we want to talk about fruitcake?
Well, I think we probably have time for both, knowing how we are. But yeah, like, so did you bake any cookies this year so far? Or did you get any?
I made some.
Yeah.
Oh, I got some from a good friend of mine who, you know, and, you know, we're not going to mention names right
really?
Now.
Really? We should.
Should we?
Because she's an awesome baker.
She is the best.
Deborah Taylor.
Deborah
not only
Taylor.
An awesome artist, but she's a really good baker.
Yeah, she really is. And I got a box of cookies that just knocked me out. Her cookies, I don't know what she does.
She's a witch.
Maybe she's a cookie witch.
She's a cookie witch.
That works.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, sugar cookies.
A baking sorceress.
Sugar cookie is a sugar cookie, right?
Uh-huh.
Not when Deborah bakes it.
Yeah, she does. You know what's really interesting about Deborah's baking? Because she also makes like the best Boston cream pie I've ever had and the best peanut butter sandwich cookie I've ever eaten. But anyway, she has this really good technique. Like she knows, I don't know, she knows like when to start something, when to stop something, how much to mix it, what temperature the butter is going to be. It's always just pretty much perfection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she researches a lot of recipes.
She does.
Good,
and we're her
good
friends.
Good stuff
and
comes
she gets
out of
us
that.
Stuff.
I know. And she gives us stuff. We like that too.
I tried to ration it I started with like one cookie a day.
Oh, stop.
I went to like one cookie an hour. And then I think it was one cookie when the other one wasn't being eaten.
And then suddenly the box was empty.
The box was empty.
It's like, what? Oh, no. I'm going to save these last two till tomorrow.
I am a living example of lack of willpower when it comes to that stuff.
Me too. It's terrible.
It is.
I mean, it's sinful, I guess, but it's fun.
Well, I don't want to go that far.
Well, some people would say it's gluttony.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and thank God.
Thank God we can be gluttons.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, making cookies is not an easy task. You know, we've been doing it since we were in third grade.
Mm-hmm.
But to make a really good cookie, you pretty much have to know what you're doing.
Didn't you have a thing where... You were like the most popular cookies in the country or something, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Like,
I think that's pretty fascinating. Like, what's the most popular cookie in each state?
Oh, that was really fascinating. And let me just pull it up here.
Yeah.
If I can get it.
Because
it's the most Googled cookies this year.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's a great thing.
And there's a little map that shows all the where everybody lives. And
can we add that to our Facebook page?
Maybe. I think so. I think I can do
that.
Yeah,
let's give that a shot.
I'll give the link.
Okay.
But you might be interested to know that the most Googled recipe in Washington State was for something vegan.
Oh, I'm so
disappointed. Can you believe it?
No, I didn't mean that, vegan friends.
Well, it's okay, but I...
What was it?
Well, it's just that's the general search term, vegan Christmas cookies.
Oh.
Rather than snickerdoodle or spritz they just typed in vegan Christmas cookies.
Oh my gosh.
And then Montana, I think, is interesting too. And Montana is gluten-free Christmas cookies.
Montana, tough old Montana,
where they have $17 billion worth of wheat.
Exactly.
It's their main product. Now, the North Dakotans like Norwegian Christmas cookies. And so in the South, Alabama.
Yeah.
Christmas sugar cookies.
Christmas. That sounds like a good Southern. I thought it might even be pralines.
And in Florida?
Our divinity.
Hershey Kiss Christmas cookies. You know, those little like thumbprint things.
I really like those.
Yeah, those are good. Those are good too.
Russian tea cakes are for Alaska. That's good.
They're close. Well, Sitka. That works. That's better.
That makes sense. Yeah.
And cream cheese cookies in Arizona.
Huh. I don't know what that is.
What? Cream cheese cookies?
Yeah.
Well, you just make cookies with some cream cheese.
Oh, okay. I was a Rhodes Scholar, just so you know.
Yeah. A Rhodes Cookie Scholar.
Rhodes Kid. Hey, you know what the most popular cookie is in Hawaii then?
No.
The white chocolate macadamia nut.
I was going to say something with macadamia nuts.
Gotta be.
I would imagine. Yeah. What else did you find? Oh, Italian Christmas cookies. I know a woman who makes hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Italian Christmas cookies. They're just so beautiful.
Are they like a spritz cookie?
Well, they're all different kinds. I mean, yeah, they do have some spritz, and then they have bars, and they have squigglies and round ones and domed ones and stars. And I don't know. They're all very special. And she sends pictures of them, and I don't get any cookies, but I get the pictures. That's pretty nice.
That is.
Yeah.
That is. I don't know. I think, what is your favorite Christmas cookie?
Probably a sugar cookie. Sugar cookie.
I think a Russian tea cake or a Mexican wedding cookie, as they call them, sort of similar.
There's also a toffee one I like.
Oh, that's a good one.
Like a Heath bar kind of thing, but it's a cookie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
English toffee cookies.
Yeah. So do you do cookies?
No, I have a problem. I have a problem that, hi, I'm Tom and I have a problem. I really can't bake things that are individually sized, like little bite-sized things, because I just see them as like, you know, when I look at a plate of cookies, it's the same as looking at a bowl of popcorn. I don't really see a difference in serving size by the handful.
Oh, I get it. Yeah.
I'm
not really a good cookie baker either. I love cookies, but I don't enjoy making them. I don't know why that is, but it's a lot of fuss.
My sister's like the queen of cookie baking.
She?
Yeah, but yeah. No, she's really good.
Well, there's a cookie baking frequently asked question.
Yeah.
And one of the thing that strikes me as sort of a panacea answer for why aren't my cookies working?
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest reasons is when people say, when the recipe says room temperature butter.
Mm-hmm.
People are using butter that is too soft. It needs to be so you just make a little dent in it with your index finger.
Oh, yes, you need to keep the structure in the body.
You have to keep the structure in the body, and then it will blend itself. But if it's too much heat, it doesn't process.
And that is, and I, for me, like mine's at 10 seconds in my microwave gives it just the right amount of softness. And I think, too, that's the most important part of making a cookie is creaming, which is when you blend the butter and the sugar. And you do it forever, like
for
5 minutes.
They say 3 to 5, and you can go 8.
I go,
you know, we talked about this a little bit last time. And the thing that happens when you're creaming that butter, cream is the wrong word to use.
It is.
You're aerating.
Yes.
That's what you want to do is just get as much air in that mixture. Fluff it. And then if you ever, dip your fingers in there and feel it. If you feel grains of sugar, it's not creamed yet.
No.
You know?
It is. Oh my gosh.
Okay, we're down to a minute.
Holy moly.
Gosh, this has been a good chat, Tom.
It's been a good chat.
Thank you.
It's been my Christmas present.
It is a nice Christmas present.
From you.
Present.
Thank you.
I always like sitting here with you. It's really good. And we hope that all of you will have a happy solstice and merry whatever you celebrate.
Mm-hmm.
Merry. And please join us again in the new year. Who knows what the new year's going to hold?
I know. We'll load you up with some new recipes and go on about food like we normally do.
Yeah, we will.
Okay. And maybe Linda will make some more bread.
I hope so. I'm always wanting to make more bread. Good night, everybody.
All right,
take
care.
Have a lovely holiday.
Love you, mean it.
Bye-bye.